Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and happy New Year week to all of you who are just getting back in the groove. If you're like me, I'm trying to get my kids back in school. I'm trying to get myself back on a routine. I'm trying to tell myself, no, I don't need any more Christmas sweets. We have to adhere to our New Year's resolutions, which, you know, as we know from the program on Tuesday, that 64% of us have already broken them. But that's okay, because there is grace and hope for you. Hey, if you've been listening to the program this week, we've been talking about my challenge, though, really for real life here on a New Year's resolution. And I have invited all of you to join me in my New Year's resolution. And that is really simple: to intentionally invest in your parenting journey. All you have to do is listen in on the program, and every week for 52 weeks, we'll be giving you a habit for healthy parenting. That's it. Just try to do the best you can. Give yourself grace when you don't. That's as easy as it is. And our first healthy habit is prayer, praying. Honestly, we've been talking about it all week, and there's so much to talk about. But today, I am so super excited to have a hometown girl in here with me. I've got a friend from right down the street here, and she is amazing. I've got Laura Seifert. She is a Bible teacher. She is the author of Forgive, Freedom is Worth It, and she is the founder of Yes Ministries. Laura and her team lead women closer to Jesus by saying yes to God's promises and trust him during seasons of the unknown through both in-person and online Bible studies, retreats, podcasts, speaking engagements, and more. Laura is a featured keynote presenter all over. She's always speaking, and most recently at a coffee house, which was super fun. We'll talk about that. Yeah. And she has a passion for teaching women and helping them access the profound truths of God's word. She's a mom. She's a wife. She's a school board member. She is just an all-around stellar human. Laura, I'm so happy to have you sitting across from me today.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm thrilled to be here. It is convenient. I was just saying before we started airing live that it's so convenient to be 2 miles down the road from you. And so in this week, when we're all still kind of sluggish, it was great to go, yes, I can be there and leave my house in 5 minutes and come right in and record. And I'm so honored to be here. I'm excited.
And so encouraging to know that God is stirring the hearts of people in our own community.
Yes.
To have somebody that I may meet you at the grocery store, but, you know, looking at what you're doing and starting a ministry, that's definitely something I want to talk about. So, sure. Laura, I think that there are people listening out there who have this secret dream, this pulling in their heart, this, you know, kind of thought, like, what if, and maybe wanting to start a ministry of their own. But that is a scary thing. So how did that start for you?
Well, years ago, God began to bubble up inside me a gift to teach. And I am the least likely. I would never have thought I would be one that would be teaching in front of larger audiences and speaking to women. But it became something in me that was burning. And the reason I share that is because I think that's really where it starts. What is burning inside you? What is it that wakes you up at night that you're thinking about? What do you dream about? That was it for me, was just communicating God's truth in a way that anyone could grab onto it. And so there were years that I had sat in churches when gifted speakers would talk, but it seemed to me like they had everything all together. And there was a little bit of a lack of vulnerability, and maybe that was the pressure they felt. So for me, I knew vulnerability and authenticity were really key and important for me. And I remember the day I just began to bring those desires and those longings before the Lord. And I didn't, you know, if you want to start something, or if you're thinking if there's something bubbling up, it can be overwhelming. I'm sure you know this too, Jessica, of how do I make all this happen? And really, that's not mine to figure out right away. Really, what was mine to do was to surrender all of this and say, this is bubbling. If this is you, God, begin to open some doors, begin to lead me down this road. And the most important thing for me to do is say yes. Lord, I'll say yes to you. I'm going to believe and trust this is not just me. It's not heartburn. It's not indigestion. I think it really is the Holy Spirit burning something in me. And so as I began to surrender that and say yes, I'll say yes to you, he just began to open doors. So I was invited to by my college pastor who was living in Houston now and was starting a men's Bible study at River Oaks Country Club, which if you're not from Houston, it's a very bougie, fancy country club.
Swanky.
And I'm not swanky. And he said, hey, I'm going to start the men's. Would you start the women's side? And I thought, what in the world? And I'm driving into River Oaks Country Club in my beat up Tahoe, rehearsing the Sanford and Son song. That's dating me, but this old song of just kind of riding into this country club. And I just began to start a Bible study. And it wasn't my job to figure out who was going to be there. It wasn't my job. My job was to be prepared and ready and open. And so I did. And it grew pretty quickly from 5 to 200 people. And then we started one here in Friendswood at the Golf Crest Country Club. And then God just began to kind of grow it. And I just continued to say yes. And he just continued to open doors. And we got to a point where it was at a size where we needed to become a 501c3 so that folks could donate and so that we could begin. We were always buying lunches. It was a lunch study. And so we needed to raise support. And so that's really kind of how it started. I really feel like instead of starting it, I stumbled into it. But at the same time, the intentionality was continuing to bring those longings and burnings before the Lord, take them seriously, don't diminish it, don't minimize it, and continue to say, God, if you'll open doors, I'll say yes.
Well, you did all this while you're a mom, mm-hmm. a busy mom. Mm-hmm. Any mom is busy. And you know, and you have duties as a wife and community and all those things. How did you juggle that?
Not really well. No.
I love that authenticity.
Yeah.
I've definitely been there.
Yeah. There were times my husband would pick up the slack with dinners or if I was really exhausted. But, you know, it's hard. There's no formula on how you juggle it. I think you just have to be really, really clear about what God has placed on your plate versus what I'd placed on my plate. Mm. So there were several things I had to cut out. And some of those were social gatherings. There were some things that I was doing socially that I loved, but I just didn't have the space for it anymore. So I had to really drill down who are my close connected friendships and maintain those. But a lot of the more of the social aspect of just being a mom and going out for lunch with girlfriends and doing things, some of those things had to go by the wayside for a season so I could focus. But I just, every year I kind of in my mind, visualize a literal plate, a dining plate. And I just go, Lord, what's on this that you've placed and what needs to move off? And I just have to stay obedient to that. And so for me, being on the school board was one that I believed he put on my plate. And so that's a priority. My family is on my plate and ministry's on my plate. And then some deep connected friendships are on my plate. And other than that, everything else is up for grabs and it changes. So it's really more about just focusing. It's not as much about how I organized my day, but for me is what was the critical thing that needed to be a part of my day.
I think that's really wise advice. And I always say, you know, you can be a good mom, a good wife, a good mother, a good cook, a good house cleaner, good carpool, chauffeur, but you can really only be two or three of those
right.
on any given good day.
Right.
And so some of those are just juggling that and mm-hmm. figuring out, but, you know, having those priorities before the Lord and just mm-hmm. walking with him every day and saying, okay, what do I need to just let go mm-hmm. and let God? I mean, that sounds
yes.
so cliche, but just say that, okay, sometimes I feel like, Laura, I don't know if you feel this, but sometimes I feel like, oh, if I don't do this, if I drop this, if I don't have this opportunity, it will never come again.
Mm-hmm.
Or the world will fall apart. Clearly, you know, if I'm not there
right.
to run this, it will fall apart. And I've learned that is such a prideful
mm-hmm.
stance. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just not the place where the Lord wants me to be.
Mm-hmm.
He can still work even if I'm not there. And
yep.
if I'm being obedient to what he calls me in his life, then that can happen. Well, one
That's
of the
good.
Things that you talked about too was the women that you mm-hmm. brought on board and how you started praying specifically
mm-hmm.
for God to surround you with a team. Because
mm-hmm.
I think we cannot do these things
no.
alone. We are made to walk in community. We are made to walk with accountability. What did that part of your journey look like for you?
Well, for me, one of the ways I learn is like as an apprentice. And I'm always hands on hand, you know, flesh on flesh. And so I always have a mentor in my life. I always am asking questions. I always am seeking out people that have been farther down the road. So there was a gentleman that had helped Beth Moore start her board of directors when she started her ministry. And so we met with him. I asked him, would you meet with us? And he did. He met with me and one other woman that was really helping me while I was at River Oaks. And the thing that he said to me, Jessica, is he said, you're going to feel the temptation to build a team with your really good friends. And he said, I would encourage you not to do that. Instead, ask God, what is it I need? And then ask him, who are the people that will fill that need? And so I did. I had to get really still. I had to get really quiet because I had a lot of friends that would have loved to have jumped in with me that were super supportive. But that wasn't what God was asking. And so I had to get real still. And there were five women, and they lived all over the city of Houston at the time. Now they live all over the country, and they all brought a different skill set. We have one that's a real financial guru. We have one who had some law experience, it was all different. And it was an unlikely ragamuffin group of women. And they were connected to me, but not connected to each other yet. And God not only brought who we needed, but he melded us together as a team because they were all called to it. They weren't coming on board because they liked me. They came on board because God was asking them to. And that was a really critical thing too. So you got to get really still. You've got to get a piece of paper. You got to ask God, what is it I need and who is it? And then I always say, be a reporter and not an analyzer. And so when I'm asking God to speak and give me those names, I write them down and I don't analyze them right away. Just write down what you sense he might be saying. And we have a mutual friend, Nona Landers, who was one of them. And she's on my board to this day, has been with me since the beginning. And I met with her for coffee and just said, I want you to come on board. I don't really know exactly the roles that you're going to play, but I want you with me. And she said yes. And God
said yes to the yes ministries.
And God had already been stirring in her heart. And she came on board and it's been incredible to see how God has used her and the gifts that she brought that she didn't even know she was bringing.
I love Nona, by the way. Yeah. So, hey, Nona.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out right there from two of your biggest fans here. But, you know, Laura, I can't help but think as you're talking about that, about the Lord bringing different people into your life. One thing that I hear from parents a lot is about their grieving loss of friendships during seasons of their life. You know, we have friends that we're all with when our kids are young and we're going to the playgroups together. And then we have maybe friends who our kids are on the same sports teams or things like that. And they feel like they grieve the loss of those friendships. But I can't help but think of the parallel in your ministry here, because you have yes ministries, but of course our greatest calling right now is when we have kids in our house, that is our greatest ministry, and we can use, I know for me, Dr. Nurse Mama, it very much ministers to my family, and they're a part of that. But I can't help but think about you saying all of those different people that you want in your ear. We should do that in our ministry as parents too.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not those friends that maybe we just get along with, but who are going to surround us with the strengths or the gifts or the wisdom that we need, but maybe even don't want. I don't know. Have you experienced this?
Well, I look around and the first step is knowing that we need people in our ear, but we need the right people in our ear. And I think there's a pressure that I think a lot of moms and dads too can face of presenting an image that we've got this figured out and that we're really shiny, and we're not. Nobody is. And so realizing that, I've just looked around and thought, God, who is it that I really want in my life and I want to hear from? And there's four women probably that are moms that are older than me that have walked with me. But I've had to be really intentional about that and say, hey, let's go to coffee. And here's what I want. I just need to pick your brain. And I need it to be confidential. And I need it to be a safe place. And I need you to speak really truthfully and honestly. And it's saved my life, I would tell you. It really has. And then those in peer groups around me, I have a lot of friends. I've been blessed with a lot of friends. I know you have too, Jessica. We live in a tight-knit community.
We do.
And it's a huge blessing. But I'm very intentional about who I really let in closely and I walk those deep roads with.
Well, that is something I want to explore more after the break, because actually I have a story about Nona playing that role in my life and some life-changing advice that she gave me. So I will share that after the break. And Laura and I will talk more about the role of prayer in our ministry, in our parenthood, in our personal life. We'll talk about that. So don't go away. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, and welcome back, friends. You are listening in to a conversation with my hometown girl, Laura Seifert. She's a Bible teacher and author of Forgive, Freedom is Worth It, and founder of Yes Ministries. And we were having a discussion about mentorship in our life and inviting different friends and voices in our life for wisdom on parenting. I promised to tell a little story, so I will do that. So Nona was my Sunday school teacher, who is now on your board, which is just so great to see the impact that she has had now. I know we've talked about this, and I know you're listening. So I can say she's not a CEO, you know, she's not corporate, but her impact on her ministry is so amazing. And so just like you were talking about, I started to be really intentional. I find that it is not very often for a woman is not going to call me and say, oh, hey, I would like to mentor you.
Right.
I would like to give you some advice about your parenting. That's rude. You know, I'd be like, oh, really? You do? Oh, really? I don't want to meet with
you. That's right.
I don't want to hear what you have to say. But if you, I have found if you ask, if I go and say, I have watched your parenting journey and I have some questions. I need to know how you did this. They are extraordinarily generous in doing that. So I would echo what Laura said, encourage you all to do that, just to reach out. If you're feeling like you're struggling, look around and see a parent who you think is just doing amazing. I guarantee you they're either not doing amazing or they'll tell you they know they're not doing amazing, but here's how they find hope in that. But anyway, Nona, so I asked her to go out to lunch with me and she did. And she gave me some really, really important advice. And at that time, my kids were probably, my oldest was about 8. So I've got them 8, 6, 4, and 2. And I'm getting sad because they're starting to grow up. And she told me, you need to love them in every stage they are. You need to embrace every stage. And I now even say that now every day, don't love a version of who your child used to be more than who they are becoming. Because yes, nobody is their best at 13 or 14 years old. I mean, just think about what you were when you were 13 or 14 years old. Like we were just not at our best and we need that extra love. And I would find myself, you know, echoing those words in my mind. And of course that's going along with, I'm reading my Bible, I'm going to church, I'm praying, I'm doing all of those things. Sometimes you just need somebody to look in the eyes and just say, hey, I see you.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. And we'll get through this.
Yes.
We'll get through this.
Yes. So do you have anything else to add about mentors?
Well, one of the encouragements for me too is, and I just echo that, just call them directly. Don't be weird about it and don't feel like it's weird. It will be great. And then honestly, be as authentic and vulnerable and real and transparent as you can be. So that's why you have to really figure out who is it that I need to be drawn to. And then for our, you know, where we are, Jessica, you've launched some of your kiddos, but you still have some kids and I've got teenagers at home. So we're in that middle age of life where we've not fully launched them all, but we're kind of getting close. But there's a lot we can share with those coming behind. And so I would say for mentoring too, be a mentee, but be a mentor. And don't, so much of what I think has been encouraging that I have done is just like you said, look them in the eye and lovingly go, Mama, you're going to make it. You're going to do this. You're going to get out. Because those younger years are so physically exhausting. But then I have found the teenage years are more emotionally taxing. That's required more. You've got to step up and engage emotionally more. But when those little ones are there, you're just wiping something all the time. You're wiping rear ends. You're wiping countertops. You're wiping faces. And so it's exhausting. And to look at, for me, when I see young moms in grocery stores and I think it's a mentoring type of role. It's just to look them in the eye and just go, your kids are great. You look great. You're doing great, Mom. You know?
You know, that happened to me. I was school shopping and I saw this mom with a junior high age girl and it was just going terribly. You know, of course the girl is not happy with anything that she's putting on. If they need to get a bigger size, that was very devastating. You know, so she's trying to explain why a bigger size is not a bad thing and how she doesn't look ugly and everything. And this mom is like killing it. She's doing amazing. She's just being so, you know, I'm sitting in the stall next to her, you know, I'm listening to her and she is just being encouraging. And I was thinking, wow, that is just I would have lost my patience, yeah, I think, by now. And so I walked out, and she had walked out at the same time, and her daughter was still in there, and she just burst into tears, like quiet, you know, so her daughter wouldn't hear. And I'll tell you what, Laura, I just, maybe I've reached the, you know, purple dress and red hat
exactly
stage of
right
my life, but I just went up to her, I just gave her the biggest hug, and I said, "You are killing it. You are doing amazing." And she was like, "You really think so?" I mean, you just need to hear those things.
You just do.
And I think dads too need this voice in their life. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with my family, we had two girls first, so my husband kind of got the girl thing down, but then he found, hey, I don't know what to do with this boy mm-hmm thing. And he really needed other voices in his life to kind of say, hey, here's what to do, because mm-hmm I mean, he loved me, but he maybe didn't want to take my advice on
right
some
sure
on sports
yeah
things.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, honey, I tried. You know, but okay, well, all of those things. I want to talk to you, Laura, about a Bible study. You've actually written several Bible studies, but mm-hmm let's start with the first one that's listed on your website here. It was so intriguing to me. It's called "Forgive, Freedom is Worth It." Mm-hmm. And you said, feeling stuck, you know the feeling, you've been hurt, mm-hmm you've been upset, you're angry, you have feelings about that certain situation holding you back from enjoying the life God intended for you. I couldn't help but think this mm-hmm is so applicable to mm-hmm parenting, which is such a challenging mm-hmm journey. Where did this study come from? Because I know it always
so
comes from a
to
personal mm-hmm experience. What, mm-hmm what inspired this?
Well, quick story. When we moved, Jason and I got married and had served on staff at a church in Sugarland for 2 years, and then we moved to Friendswood. And when we moved to Friendswood, he felt called that we were to leave where we were and come. And I did not. I was quite content where we were. I'd probably have still stayed there. But I knew that we were called to come here, but it was, I came kicking and screaming. Little did I know what a blessing this community would be for me. But when I got here, I was really struggling. And so I got connected to a Christian counselor, mentored me for 2 years. And one day she asked me a question, and I was early 30s. So this was, you know, I'm 50. It was 20 years ago, probably. And she said, "Laura, do you think you struggle with anger?" And that question made me so mad. I was like, how dare you ask me that question? And I said, "No, I don't. I don't at all. Next question." And she said, "Well, I think you do. And I want to give you a week to think about it." So she ended the session and had me leave right then. And all the way home, I mean, I had road rage. I was so furious. But I had committed that I was actually going to take this seriously, and I was going to commit to this discipleship time with her. So I did. I prayed about it a week, and God began to kind of unveil the truth that I really was angry. Mm. So I came back the next week, and she said, "I think that anger stems from unforgiveness." And I didn't know, I didn't understand what that meant. I had walked with the Lord. I'd been a Christian since I was a young girl, had really been growing in my faith in my 20s. But there was a disconnect that was happening. I was working really hard and serving really well and saying all the right things and memorizing the Bible studies. Bible passages and leading Bible studies, but my affection for the Lord was waning. I was becoming tired, burned out, and I remember sitting in church one day, and a woman next to me was raising her hands in worship, and it irritated me. This is vulnerable, y'all. And I was like, "What? That's got to be a show," because I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that. That wasn't true for me, so she must be pretending. And I realized that I was angry toward God. And I'd never had permission, and no one had ever said, "That's okay, let's talk about it." And so this sweet, trusted counselor and I walked back, and we kind of walked through some things that had happened in my childhood. My parents got divorced. I never knew how to really deal. I thought I dealt with that and moved on. But what had stuck and planted in there was some unforgiveness toward both parents. And that, and also toward God, of God, how did you allow this to happen? So she began to walk me through the process of forgiveness. I thought I knew what that meant, but what I really thought at the time forgiveness meant was just let go and let God. You'd mentioned that earlier, yeah, but in this context, that's not the correct. It
no
doesn't work. You can't let go. So I needed to understand and have some tools on what does it look like to take a hurt, a wounding, a debt toward God before the Lord and allow Him to take it from me and let go of it. And so I learned 5 steps about forgiveness, and they changed my life dramatically. And I began to work them into my life. And so I thought, if I were going to write a book
or a Bible study that I would want to be my legacy for my children, it would be about forgiveness because it's changed my life. So I understood that while God didn't need my forgiveness because he's never wronged me because he's holy, I had unforgiveness toward him because I couldn't control him. And I didn't understand why he allowed certain things to happen in my life. And he didn't fix it when I wanted him to. And all the things that we naturally will struggle with if we walk with the Lord. Disappointments. In his good grace, he walked me through the Holy Spirit, just a process of bringing that before him, grieving what I had lost and some hurts in my life, and then letting it go, and then walking in that newness of life that he promised me. And that's all really, in a nutshell, kind of forgiveness. It's a five-step journey. But I wanted to write about it because it changed my life. And I'll tell you, I'm grateful I walked through that before I became a mom. Mm-hmm. Because it changed my relationship with both my parents. My kids saw a woman that was at peace, that wasn't walking with a root of bitterness. Not that I don't still struggle. And I mean, there's all sorts of days I have to forgive. But some big heavy hitters were taken, uprooted because of going through that process before I became a mom. So it definitely impacts your parenting.
Well, I'm so grateful that you shared so vulnerably and transparently, mm-hmm. because I want to go back and revisit part of your story that I think is really important. So often when we are struggling with something, a lot of times that has to do with trauma, it manifests itself as physical symptoms, mm-hmm. and we are blind to it. Mm-hmm. We don't recognize it. I talk about this a lot as a nurse practitioner. It's somatization. It's basically, you know, this psychological trauma that you have can only plow its way through your physical being for so long before you start to have symptoms. Now, that can be anger, like you had. It can be irritability. It can be depression. And what I see in clinical practice is a lot of parents will focus and hyperfixate on that problem manifesting itself in their kids, you know, or their spouse, or their relationship. It's like, this is not my problem. I am justified in my anger or my irritability or my depression. And it's really hard to look inside. It's like, we just don't see it. And that seems like a really scary place to be, I think, to say, because we want to fix our kids. I remember one day when I was praying, and we're going to talk about prayer a little bit more and a little bit. And I was praying out loud. I was really frustrated with my kids, and my kids started praying for me, and they're like, God, please help mommy not to be so frustrated. Mm. And I prayed right back and I said, God, please help my kids not to be so frustrating. Was not my best moment at all. But, you know, I recognized in that moment I was projecting something onto them. I was frustrated, not really because of their behavior, but because I hadn't really recognized that or dealt with that trigger in myself. So can we go back and slow walk that a little bit? Mm-hmm. Like, what was that like for you just in that realization that you had unforgiveness? Like, did it happen instantaneously? Was it gradual over time?
Well, the realizing it?
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah. It was, well, it really, for that solid week, I really had to sit in it. And so the week for most people would be like 5 years, I think, because we can easily get distracted. I was forced to sit in it knowing I had to go back next Tuesday and talk about it. And that was my homework, was to really ask God, the only homework she gave me, ask God, do I have an issue with unforgiveness? And he was not quiet. He was, because I had really gotten to a place of, it wasn't a place of like, I'm going to be brave and open before the Lord. It was a place of, I'm hemorrhaging, I am hurting, and I can't escape this pain anymore. And so it was that kind of desperation. And God in his goodness will do that. I would encourage anyone that's listening, if you think you might be struggling with unforgiveness, which that's everyone that's listening because we're human, do the work on the front end and avoid the trenches of pain. But for me, when I went back the following week, she just began to help me understand that unforgiveness, when someone wrongs you, and it can be a person, it can be a group of people. If you've been in a church for 30 minutes or longer, you know, you can find that the people that you need to feel safest with can be the most wounding, unintentionally or intentionally. But regardless, wherever that wound comes from, it's a debt that's owed. That's what forgiveness means. When somebody's wronged me, they owe me either an apology to make it right, whatever it is. That's when Jesus says, forgive them, they don't know what they do. He's paying our debt. We owed the debt. So I had to understand, what does it mean?
who is indebted to me, whether they realize it or not. And so literally she said, I just want you to make a list. I want you to sit down and make a list of anyone that just comes to you. Again, it was the same thing. Ask God and just report who comes to mind. And I had a long legal pad list of names. And what was so interesting, there were biggies on my list, like my parents and ex-boyfriends and coaches. And there were things like that that I knew would come quickly. And then when I thought, well, I think I've got everybody written down, I just remember asking, God, is there anyone I've maybe don't realize? And he brought to mind a childhood friend that didn't wrong me directly, but really wounded a close friend of mine. And I'd picked up that burden and unforgiveness myself on behalf of someone I loved and had to write her name down. And so as I did that, I then, you take one at a time. And the first person, let's say it was my mom, tell God, that's what in the book, who is it that hurt you? And then tell God what happened. Just tell him. And then how did it make you feel? And then now release them over to God. And my counselor shared with me, and I share this with women, is I had to really visualize, Max Lucado says, unforgiveness is like being in a prison, but you're the one in there. You think it's someone else. And I had to, once I understood that, it began to change things as well.
One of my favorite quotes is from a nurse and founder of the American Red Cross, Clara Barton. Mm-hmm. And somebody was telling her, a friend was recounting an offense to her and saying, talking about this offense. And Clara Barton acted like she didn't even remember it. And she said, I know you remember this. This was terrible. And Clara said, no, I distinctly remember forgetting that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you know, I thought it doesn't mean that we don't have boundaries, because that's a right. whole nother conversation. But just choosing to let that, give mm-hmm. that back to God. And sometimes I do that, you know, for a day, sometimes a week, sometimes a year, sometimes 5 minutes. Yeah. But there's so much more to talk about. We'll talk more about forgiveness and the role that prayer plays Good. In that when we get back.
That's great.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to my conversation with my hometown friend, Laura Seifert, who is a Bible teacher, author of Forgive, Freedom is Worth It, and founder of Yes Ministries. And Laura, I have to say, this conversation has taken a very unexpected turn for me, and I love it. I just feel the Holy Spirit guiding our conversation. Oh. And I think that there are people out there listening who are thinking, I heard what you said. And that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I have unforgiveness. And you were just telling me something during the break about how, you know, we want to fix our kids mm-hmm. if we have that. But you said fix a casserole, fix anything. We self-medicate.
You're right.
We do that with scrolling through mm-hmm. our phones. We do that with busyness. Like, let's just keep busy because we don't want to address that. Mm-hmm. But it's like having your foot in a trap, you know,
yes.
and they're coming close and somebody's saying, I can free you. And you're like, no, don't touch mm-hmm. it. Don't touch it. That is such a dangerous place mm-hmm. to be. It's a dark and lonely place to be. Mm-hmm. And you said before the break that there were 5 steps mm-hmm. that you learned to forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And I really want to know what they are.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of us, I'll say too, I would love to walk through these 5 steps, but a lot of us, if we're in that dark place or if you're feeling like this connects to you and you want to divert attention, a lot of times it's because we don't know what to do. If we were to look yeah. at it, we don't know how to get out of it. And so it's scary to think, well, I'm going to stay there forever then. So if we don't have tools, mm-hmm. it is scary, rightly so, because I think there's a lot of misconception and misunderstanding around the subject of forgiveness. Most of us think you forgive and forget. Well, we don't have amnesia. You can't do that. Or just sweep it under the rug, or you're right. too sensitive. Get over it. All of those things, I think, keep us trapped in unforgiveness. And I think the enemy is shrewd in doing that. So forgiveness is really, if you look at it like if you're wounded or if someone wrongs you, they're now indebted to you. If there's an injury that occurs in my life from someone, they're indebted to me to apologize, to recognize it, to make it right. And here's the thing is most times they don't. And sometimes they don't even know that they've hurt you. Some people do. They intentionally hurt you. But a lot of times pain and wounds come unintentionally. My parents never meant to hurt me by getting divorced, but it did hurt me, and it required forgiveness on my part. So just to know that up front. And then the 5 steps, are in the book in more detail, but I'll walk through them quickly. The first is tell God what happened. Tell him what happened. And the purpose there is to get in front of God with your pain. And you might say, well, he already knows what happened. Yeah, he does. But the reason, if you see Jesus, when he asks questions throughout scripture in the gospels, you see Jesus always asking questions. Or God, when he shows up to Hagar by the well, what happened? Where have you been? Where are you going? Mm-hmm. He's drawing us closer. It's all relational. He's a relational God. So tell God what happened so you can connect with God. So write it down. I write it down. You don't have to. You can go walk on the beach and just scream it if you want, or get in your car or your shower. But tell God what happened. Get detailed. Remember it. You won't have to stay there, but go back and remember it. And then the second step is tell him how it made you feel. This is a hard one because we don't want to feel it. So I've told him my parents got divorced. How did it make you feel? Really what that means is grieve it. Grieve that with the Lord. So allow the Lord to come next to you and comfort you. And so to grieve it meant I would write down, it made me feel alone. It made me feel like I'd lost my voice, like it was happening to me indirectly and I couldn't say anything. All the things that that divorce made me feel, I wrote down and didn't hold anything back. And so feel it, sit there, cry over it. If tears aren't coming, that's okay. But feel it, don't skip the step. A lot of people want to skip the step. And then the third step is to cancel the debt. And what that means is my parents are no longer on the hook for that. I'm going to cancel that debt. This is really critical, is by canceling the debt, we're not minimizing what happened. And neither is Jesus. He doesn't minimize the cross and he doesn't minimize our pain. So we're not minimizing it, but by canceling the debt, we're really transferring it over to him. This is an example that I love. If you're shopping in Walmart and you have everything in your cart and you've not yet made it to the cash register, who owns those items in your cart? Mm-hmm. Walmart does.
Yeah.
But when I walk through the cash register and I pay for it and I walk out, those items are now mine. And that's what Jesus is asking you to do. That pain that's in your cart, he's asking you to transfer it over to him. Let him take it. So take it out and put it at the feet of the cross is what I do. And it's his now. And then the fourth step after doing that, canceling the debt, is to accept, A-C-C-E-P-T, accept the person just as they are. And again, this isn't condoning the person just as they are. We don't minimize sin. But by accepting them, I realize I don't have the power to make them change. I don't have the power to make them realize they've hurt me. I don't have the power to make them repent. I don't have the power to make them want to reconcile or not. So accept just means you take a really good hard look at this is who they are and that may never change. And I just have to accept that. And by doing so, I'm trusting God. It doesn't mean I stop praying for change. I just no longer demand it. I don't need them to change to be okay. So caveat on this is if you're in an abusive relationship, that is not what we're talking about. So if you're in an abusive relationship, God wants you to be safe. And so I would reach out and tell someone, a trusted confidant that could help you. Most relationships that we're in, that we stay in, that we are still connected with, I have to accept them. Even those that I'm not connected with anymore, I have to accept that people that have hurt me may never change. Fifth step and final step is risk. Risk is the title. Risk willing to be hurt again. Let me just explain what this means. It does not mean that I jump back into unhealthy relationships with somebody that hurt me. Boundaries are a part of healthy living. But it also doesn't mean that I'm going to self-protect in an effort to never be hurt again. So by self-protecting, y'all, we really shut down and we are sidelined. And so we miss out on living and on the life, the abundant life God's called us to. And so I have to risk, I have to get in the game again. Jason and my husband and I have been on church staffs most of our whole adult life. And people hurt people. And so we've been wounded in the middle of church staffs and by friends that we had loved. And that has just happened. And so the answer for me was never to shut down and not do ministry again because it felt too painful. So I had to risk getting back in the game. That's what I mean by that.
Risk friendships again. If you've been hurt by a friend, risk friendships. Then it doesn't mean you don't walk in discernment and you don't walk in with boundaries. And listen, I've been in some good counseling chairs and I can recommend a lot. I'm sure you can too. Mentors and counselors that can help us understand what boundaries mean. But God is there's a life to be lived and we can walk in freedom when we've let go of this. And I'll give you a quick example. I adore my mom, but for whatever reason, when my parents got divorced, she was the one I was mad at the most. Even though she suffered more in the marriage, she was the one I was mad at. And I had to deal with that with the Lord. And when I walked through these five steps, and I always say, when God asks you to kind of make a list, we all have a list in our mind of those that have hurt us. And when by canceling the debt, I cross her, I clear my list, I crossed her off my list. When I did that and walked through these five steps, it wasn't like the earth moved and this earth-shattering experience. But I will tell you, the next time I saw her, it was different. It was different. And my counselor said this, and I believe it, that spiritual bonds are broken when we walk through the obedient steps of forgiveness. And you'll see it. You'll see it play out in your life. You'll see it. My mom came. She didn't live in my town at the time. We've since moved her down. I adore her. I love my relationship with my mom. But when my sister got married and she came down, she said, "Laura, I've never seen peace on you like this before." Mm-hmm. And I didn't sit down and go, it's because I walked through forgiveness. But that was why. That was absolutely why. And I'll say this quick, Jessica. A lot of people ask about reconciliation. Does that go hand in hand? Do I have to reconcile for forgiveness to take hold? No, you don't. Sometimes God brings reconciliation and sometimes it's healthier to walk in peace but not in connection with someone that's hurt you. So that you just really leave up to the Lord and trust him with that.
You know, I can relate to that so much because I've been very open in sharing mm-hmm. my broken relationship with my parents. Yeah. And I've shared a story before about when I was in conflict and I was sitting on the recliner on the phone and my husband came out and took a photo of me. This was with a digital camera. So he had to actually like take some effort. It wasn't just like he had a smartphone, right, to snap a picture. And I looked terrible. I mean, I was snot-nosed, like just in my PJs, frizzy hair, like looked awful. And I saw that picture and I was so angry. I was like, why would you do that? Are you just trying to shame me? And he turned around that camera and showed me the picture again. And he said, "This is what our children see every day is you mourning the life you'll never have while real life walks by you. I know it still gives me goosebumps and it reminds me of what you said about accepting the limitations of other people. So I had to recognize that what I wanted was just, they were not capable of giving. That was not going to happen outside of divine intervention, which I believe, you know, miracles can happen and God can work in miraculous ways. But I had to just accept that at that moment that it's not there. Mm-hmm. Why are you going back and mourning something and trying to find and preserve something that is long gone? Yeah. That is really, really hard. Well, Laura, what role does prayer play in all of this? Mm. You talked a little bit about steps one and two, just about really, you talked about tell God what happened and tell him how you feel about it. That's praying. But that may not be what people think of when they think of prayer. So how does prayer work in all of this?
Well, you're exactly right. All five of these steps are prayer because you're doing it in the presence of God.
Yeah.
And really, I think it's so important. I think I grew up, and we've heard lots of acronyms about prayer that kind of help us. But really, at the end of the day, if we are Christians, we believe in a relational God. It's not just a belief system. It's a relationship. And so any relationship takes communication. And that's what prayer is. It's talking and listening to God, talking and listening to God, talking and listening to God. Some of us do that with a journal. Some of us do that with like five steps like this. Some of us do that in the shower. Some of us do that on our knees by our bed. Some of us do that with a written prayer already for us that we recite, like the Lord's Prayer or the Book of Common Prayer. The method is not what's critical. It's the motivation of the heart that God's interested in. And so to me, I think God just wants us to believe him more than we believe in him. And by believing him, I'll talk to him. Like if I believe him, I'm going to talk to him. And so it can be messy. It can be personal. There's not a right or wrong way, I don't believe. I think it's God saying, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Tell me what's going on. Cast your cares on me because I care for you so much, Scripture says. And so really, prayer is that. And I will tell you, I love all of your posts about parenting, and they're critical. I've told so many people, your Behind Closed Doors book is the Holy Grail. It's like everyone needs it. But at the end of the day, we really fight on our knees. Battle is on our knees. Yes. And so there are many times I have come to the Lord asking for one thing for my kid. You know, this is what I want, God. Would you do this? Would you do this? Would you do this? And a spiritual mentor said to me, let's shift that prayer. And really what you're asking, what really you want is for your kid to invite God in. You want your kid to invite God into the space and into. So why don't we begin to pray that? And it's just changed everything. So I talked to God about my kids. I talked to God about, as a parent, the inadequacies I feel. I talked to God about the fear that I feel. I talked to God about the pride that I feel, the joy that I feel. And by doing that, he loosens my grip every time, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, because nothing makes you more vulnerable than being a parent, however you became a parent, biologically, adoptively, however it is, it doesn't matter. It's like our heart starts to beat on the outside of our chest and we're so vulnerable. And I don't like that. I don't want to feel that way. I want to feel like it's in control and we're all good and I know the outcome and my kid's going to outlive me and they're going to be successful and happy and all of that. And none of that is guaranteed. What's guaranteed is we'll have trials and he'll be with us. So when my fists get clenched and I'm trying to control an outcome or a situation, prayer, talking to God, listening and talking back, it loosens that grip and it loosens my shoulders and it just causes me to breathe deeply. And then that changes how I interact with them. I'm a lot nicer. I'm a lot more patient. I'm a lot more present because it's not on me to fix it. It's not on me to fix it. And so God's not asking me, he's not asking me to be perfect, but he's not asking me to fix it. He's not asking me to be the perfect parent. He just wants me to be present with him.
Well, you know, you talked about clenched fist, and that's one thing that God has taught me is to wait with open hands, not hold on to anything too tightly, but also have my hands open for things that he wants me to receive.
Right.
I don't want to miss out on those opportunities. Well, Laura, so many of our listeners are going to want to find you. Where can they find
Great.
You?
Great. I would love that. My Instagram is the best way to find me is Laura Seifert, and that's S-E-I-F-E-R-T. Laura Seifert, yes, Y-E-S, is on Instagram. And then my website is yesministries.net, plural, yesministries.net. Those are the best two places to find me.
And we'll post it on the show notes. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure you join us tomorrow. I'm going to have a really, really important episode to tell parents everything they need to know about human trafficking. You won't want to miss it. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.